Everyone, it seems, has an opinion about Donald Trump. He's an outsider who's shaking things up as president. Or he's a populist who's sowing division among the American people. Then there's the view of ISIS, the extremists. There's some evidence that ISIS recruiters like Trump because they think his rhetoric could drive people to become jihadis. In fact, there is a raging debate about whether the president's rhetoric is helping or hurting the militant group. Amarnath Amarasingham is a senior research fellow at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue in London. He's been communicating with ISIS jihadists in Syria who were recruited from Western countries, and he says they're easier to find than he thought.
What we noticed about the Syrian conflict from the very beginning was that a lot of these Western fighters were young kids, right? And so they had Twitter accounts, they had Facebook accounts, they had a variety of different social media platforms. And unlike previous conflicts, when these guys traveled over to Syria and Iraq, they kept their Twitter accounts active and they kept their Facebook accounts active. And they were reporting in real time about what they were doing, how they were finding their life in Syria and Iraq and so on. And so it became fairly easy at that time in 2013-14 to just reach out to them as you would any other person on Twitter and actually ask for interviews and see if you can get a conversation going. And that scenario has changed in the recent months where a lot of these fighters are not online anymore. So I'm kind of forced to talk to people I've always been talking to. Mm.
So how many of these recruits are you still in touch with?
I'm still interviewing about three ISIS fighters and quite a few more who are with Jabhat al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda-linked groups that are active in Syria. But there was a time in 2013-14 where I was talking to 10 or 15. Many of them have vanished from the online community and others have died, others have been killed. And so it's been a bizarre research project over the last little while. So
this literacy they have with social media and tech suggests a bit about who they are. But can you tell us a little more about their background? I mean, where are they from? How did they grow up? That kind of thing.
It tends to be a bit all over the place. You know, they're converts. They're people who were born into Islam and started practicing later. They come from a variety of socioeconomic backgrounds, religious backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds. Some come from broken homes. Others are perfectly fine. Some are high school dropouts. Others have fairly high level educations and were working in $100,000 paying jobs with a wife and a kid at the time that they left.
Where are they from? What countries?
The ones I talk to now are there's a British guy, a French guy, and a Canadian who I'm still talking to. Mm. And there were quite a few in the past from Belgium and Holland and the U.S. who were killed, or at least that was the rumor.
So as to the Trump effect on jihadists, I know you spoke with a few recruits right after Trump was elected. What did they say at that point?
Initially, they were kind of surprised at my question because they didn't seem to be paying too much attention, at least the ones I spoke to. And they kind of argued that, you know, what's the big deal? It's just another presidency in the U.S. It's not like, you know, we fared any better under George W. Bush or Obama. You know, we were still dealing with drones. We were still dealing with aggression. And so just because Trump is there, it doesn't really mean a whole lot.
And has that changed since the election in November?
I think so. I think particularly after the Muslim ban or the so-called Muslim ban, the immigration ban, and his kind of ongoing use of, you know, radical Islamic terrorism and the argument amongst some of his staff that you have to use this language, otherwise we may lose, you know, has had interesting consequences in that they see not so much on what that effect has on them, but on what it might have for other members of the Muslim community in general and perhaps what it means for recruitment and things like that.
Yeah, talk about the recruitment part, because it sounds like there's anger because of Trump's travel ban and some of his positions and policies. What is it about Donald Trump that ISIS jihadists believe might actually help their cause?
I mean, they see him as speaking the truth, right? And bringing to light what was always kind of a hidden agenda in the U.S. under Bush and under Clinton and under Obama. They always said, this is not a war on Islam. This is a war on a very small subset of terrorist groups and so on. Whereas Trump kind of muddies that boundary a little bit and says, you know, Islam itself hates us. And so they're hoping, or some of these jihadists are hoping, that the kind of fake distinction that was made between Islam and terrorism will become obvious to the majority of the Muslim community. And they'll start to see that their place in the country is actually insecure. The assumption amongst jihadists, and of course, this is not really true based on the massive protests we saw against the Muslim ban and things like that, is that this has a kind of effect on recruitment and that they'll actually start to win hearts and minds amongst Muslims in the U.S.
Is Trump's rhetoric and policies, is it kind of a casus belli for ISIS? Is it kind of a cue that they'll now step up attacks, or they're just hoping, really, according to your research, that this will kind of convince other Muslims that, look, this is what the U.S. has been all along?
it's interesting that they haven't used Trump at all in any propaganda material whatsoever, right? Whether it's just minor posters and releases or major video releases, you would think Trump would be a perfect foil to throw into a propaganda, you know, into a video of some kind, but they haven't actually mentioned him even once. But I think they're hoping that his rhetoric will spur on kind of disaffected Muslim youth to kind of take up their cause.
Amarnath, I got to ask you, what is the value in communicating with these jihadists? I mean, shouldn't we just assume they're living in a vacuum of propaganda and extremism? So how valuable really are their comments? And what can we really learn from just 3 or 5 ISIS fighters?
Yeah, I mean, I think the terrorism field in general struggles with this idea of primary data, right? And in any other kind of social studies and social sciences, we thrive on primary data. If we're studying homelessness or crime or gangs, we go out and talk to these people to gain an insight into why they joined and what they're up to. And I think with terrorism, kind of for obvious reasons, that data is not there, or it's there in very small numbers. But in terms of the benefit, I think we have to kind of understand where they're coming from. A good chunk of what they say is, of course, propaganda that they put out in their videos, and it's not that different than what they tell you privately. But when you ask them about their parents, when you ask them about their siblings, when you ask them about their educations, when you ask them about life in the UK or life in the US, you do get a more human picture of where they took the turns that eventually led them to their life in Syria and fighting for ISIS. And so I think if we're talking about prevention, if we're talking about spending all this money to prevent future kids from leaving, at a fundamental level, we need to understand what led them there. And I think that's where the value comes in.
Amarnath Amarasingham co-directs a study of Western foreign fighters at the University of Waterloo in Ontario. He wrote about his conversations with ISIS fighters for Politico. Amarnath, thank you very much.
Thank you.